I'm Harry Hendricks, and one of the primary reasons that I'm here is because of the project called Caring Community that I've been working on since, I really started working on it since 1970. And more particularly since 1978 in the Americanism Church. And I want to, this is kind of open forum, so I want to restate basically what are the components of the project and some parameters out of which we're working now. And then just leave it open to some questions. The two reasons, or needs I guess I should say, that a project like Caring Community was developed was two different perspectives. One was the question about how do people really experience the life of the church, and from a congregational perspective, everything we could find out said that from the person in the pews viewpoint, congregation life is pretty fragmented. You know, worship is a very specific kind of arena that's very clearly defined, etc. Then there's another whole component called learning or education, primarily Sunday school, and so and those are not very well interrelated. And when you go beyond that, there's a sprinkling of experiences in youth ministry, tails off with some emphasis on evangelism, but the primary experience for most people is Sunday morning. Now the questions we were asking was, what in fact do people experience there on the basis of what is the biblical description and definition of what is the church as the people of God? And we found that was not very well correlated. The other thing that concerned us was the shift in the image of family. Pre-World War II, if you'd have said the family's going to get together, you'd have the image in people's minds of an extended family that literally brought themselves together and had a sense of bonding that was intergenerational, pretty inclusive. But the shift, and by the way, for most of the constituency that we're working with, that family was pretty well bonded to the church, the experience on Sunday morning. So a lot of the community or koinonia or care systems were really taken care of in the family. Now when you took that extended family picture out of it, and increasingly when you say the family's going to get together today, you at best have a nuclear family picture that is, for most people, rather limited. So we began to look for what are those pictures in people's minds that they've experienced and associated that are somewhat responsive to what is the biblical promise of the church as a body of Christ, in other words, a community. So we began to look for congregations that we could begin to work with back in 1976, and began to do some piloting with what now is developed into Caring Community. The Caring Community project has been part of the Americanism Church since 1983 as a project. It's going on in about 36 congregations in different parts of the country. I'll be going to Germany next month to train 8 congregations that are really scattered around most of the Lutheran churches in West Germany. We're having some interesting experiences with congregations of various sizes and shapes, etc. The basic things, some of you have heard me say this before, of Caring Community, that it is a covenanted community of 35 to 70 people. And the reason we got at that number was from research in anthropology that the maximum size of the extended family or clan is about 50 to 70 people. So we wanted to see what would happen if you got that number of people together who would agree together to spend 6 to 9 months together for 2 hours a week, so that you had an extended period of time for those same folks. As well as that, another component, an essential one, is that it'd be an intergenerational community. Our research and our pilot congregations confirmed that was a very important ingredient, particularly children and elderly and the whole spectrum, not just kids and elderly, but the whole spectrum. The fourth component is liturgy, and as I've been talking about this week, liturgy literally as the work of the people. And I think the best way to try to characterize the shift that you have to go through to have a sense of how that liturgy operates in a shared authority way is if you kind of picture Sunday morning, the typical Sunday morning setting, for most people, as I've checked it out, God is more particularly up on the present on the altar than he is anywhere else, he or she. Because that goes to basically to our church architecture. Because that's how the building was designed, that up on the altar, that's where the host is to be. So historically and architecturally, the whole thing says that's where God is. The authority is primarily in the pastor. And the sanctuary is, in a sense, by description, a place that keeps the world out, and you know, you keep this kind of a sacred place. For Caring Community liturgy to make some sense in a way of picturing it, it needs to have three shifts. In other words, the clergy have to get alongside of people, not just symbolically, but in a sense of presence, so that we really work at understanding shared authority. In other words, the priesthood of all believers has got to, you know, be a really serious effort at sharing authority. The other thing is that the shift has to take place from God being up on the altar to understanding our baptism, that God is present in us as we are baptized into Christ, and that Christ literally has bound us together in community. So we share power and authority. And the third shift is that relationship, that community, goes on not just inside the building. If you can make those shifts, then invocation, which is basically an agreement within the community that we are called from our baptism to live in God's creation and to take ourselves seriously as God's creation, and that our vocation, our calling, is to live that out in the world. And so this kind of calling card, if you will, basically invocation is the agreement that you are called to be you by name, to be yourself, to God, to each other, and that you have a vocation to household, work, school, retirement, and how we care for the earth. That's an important kind of thing to keep in mind as a basic covenant or agreement here, because in the two-hour experience in the Caring Community, basically this is the two-hour process. The first 5 minutes, the whole community gathers to basically reinforce and reflect that this is what we've agreed from our baptism. We were accountable to that vocation. Next, the community of 35 to 70 forms into family groups, we call them, like 6 or 7 people. And during that time, it's about 15-20 minutes. And if you had a household of 4 or 5, they would all be in different family groups, so you could picture that. But basically, during this time, it's a matter of debriefing. How was it living with yourself this past week? How was it in your household? How was it wherever your vocation calls you? as a citizen and as you care for the earth. Confession is making that known. Absolution is having that being really accepted. And the celebration of that forgiveness takes place in those family groups. And so the declaration of that kind of forgiveness coming out of our baptism. The next part of the process is the whole community gathers for the word, the same text that you would use for the, you know, for the week, with a lot more emphasis on what is going on there historically, and wrestling as a community with what is it that God is calling forth from us now. That's basically what it is. The whole community gathers for that. The next, once we wrestle with that, it'll take about 45 minutes probably, we go back to the same family groups for creed time. And basically the issue is there now, what are you going to do about that word this week? Creed much more as stance taking about dealing with God's creation, living out that kingdom, being empowered to be about reconciliation. And those stances probably will go back to one of these domains where whatever the word is focused for you, that will be the specific kind of ministry you'll be asked to identify within this creed group, you know, at that part of your work. Then the community gathers, once you've identified that specific ministry, that becomes your offering for the week. And the community gathers then for prayers to be strengthened, and as we are about being called to live out that ministry, that offering. And then the closing is with the Holy Communion. That's basically the two-hour process that really is the basic component of what caring community is. I wanted to restate that, and I think with that I'll just leave it open. This is a forum. Any questions about the information here or whatever? I don't know what the... Yeah?
What happens? What's the reaction of people? What do they say a week later?
Well, the steps to get there would be, first of all, a congregation would have to, before they get into this thing, would have to decide that this is necessary.
But I mean, once they did it, I'm interested in what the reaction is after that happens.
After this happens? Uh-huh. Yeah. I think number one is that they have a much more clear focus as to what their ministry is in their workplace. This becomes much more internalized. Yeah. And there is a empowering of that because it's their focus on their... They see their ministry in those places. Ministry isn't focused at the place, it's out there. That's probably the most powerful thing. The stories that come out, I guess some of the most exciting things to me is that you know, for some families, it's the kids that bring them, get back to this. They want to miss Thursday night. Pass up Sunday, but they wouldn't miss this. The impact of the relational stuff is very important. The other kind of thing that happens is that there is a bonding between people beyond family that is very, very exciting. Kids to elderly, so there's a lot of crossover there. Other kind of stories would be that particularly in the parishes that we were involved in the pilot, as I visited the congregation said the preaching has improved, which I thought was an interesting comment, because the pastor was alongside of this process and heard the issues about where people were wrestling with and how they saw that word, and it was a totally different kind of arena from which to begin to preach. A lot of, is that kind of stories? Yeah. Yeah.
Is this for an affluent society?
I hope not. Yeah. I hope it is.
What has been your pilot?
Yeah. pilot congregations, we've had everything from we have a parish in Phoenix, Arizona, where Jim Oinas is, Alzona, which is a bilingual parish. Probably they have black, Hispanic, Native American, a few Anglos. Interesting parish, very poor. All the way from a mission congregation in Ohio to First Lutheran in Sioux Falls, which has about 5,000 members. You know, so it's the whole range. What the impact is on some of the larger congregations, we don't know yet, because they've only been into it for a couple of years. But now, if anything, we put the emphasis on making sure that within that community there's a lot of diversity. You know, we put the emphasis on that, so that you don't have all the wealthy or affluent. One way to do that is that, and it's up to the parish to wrestle with those things. After a congregation decides they really want to do this, we train a pastor and layperson, because the shared authority has to begin immediately. And that's a 5-day training, and then that team goes back to congregation and works with a small group of 12 to 15 persons for about 11 weeks. Now that core group, we call it, needs to be selected to be pretty representative of the congregation. And so that means by age, by social and educational status, so that you begin experiencing the possibility that diverse community can be bonded. It's very important to start with that. Then they recruit and form that first intergenerational community of 35 to 70. You got a question, Marsh?
Yeah. You said the pastor was alongside. Now, do you mean that he's not part of the, are you sure she is not part of the this thing? Or
yeah.
Are they part, is the pastor part of it too?
Oh, yeah. Pastor is part of it. Yeah.
Part of it.
It is a participant on a shared basis.
Yeah.
Not the authority outside, but is a participant, is a part of one of these family groups. I mean, yeah, very definitely.
I mean, the reason I ask that is because it seems to me like it would really be very threatening to a lot of pastors to be confessing in front of their congregation like that.
Yeah.
It would be really a difficult thing.
Yeah. That's what we found. It's very important. In our pilot, when we first started, we trained some lay persons by themselves and some pastors by themselves, and it just did not work. I mean, some things happened, but it was, we got the word, well, is this a clergy program or is it a lay program? You know, and in some places where we trained a lay person and the pastor was involved and moved, it was great. But we learned rather quickly within the first year that we needed to train pastors and laypersons together, so that shared authority was something that they began to do while we're on the 5-day training.
Now, another question: How did you decide, or how did you pick these churches that started out with this kind of thing, pilot thing?
Well, that's an interesting question. I remember. The three other people that were first brainstorming, we were wondering back in 1976 whether we could find 5 congregations that would even dare to try something like this. Mm-hmm. So we contacted a couple of districts, and they just got on the horn and gave us some parishes that they thought might be interested, and we had to select down from 30 so we could develop some kind of a grid to talk about parishes that were in very heavily Lutheran, rural, urban. So we had a pretty good cross section with those 20 congregations of city, two-point parishes and stuff like that. Yes.
I'm not sure I get the picture here. Now, for instance, when you had decided on a church or then you agreed and so forth, was that divided up into groups then, or was it just a sort of a pilot group or some that were willing to do this so that the pastor, well, I was trying to decide whether the pastor was going to go to six or seven of them or not, or, because you said he should be a part.
Yeah, good question. In the pilot, which was that was from 77 to about 80. We didn't have a lot of these answers about these kind of things, so we couldn't tell a congregation, you know, what the progression was and what could happen. So we would, you know, we would have literally ask the congregation, can we work with you? And we only had one community at a time. Yeah, we want to make sure that the congregation would begin with one experience, training two people, then working with a small group, and then having one community like this, so that they would, from their experience, evaluate, and they would then progress from there. Now, we would not recommend splitting up your congregation and starting. No, one. So it grows from the experience of your own parish. Definitely. Yeah.
That was my question. I was wondering if you started out with just one community, how you chose 35 to 70, or congregation varied in size, if you did a larger one, maybe?
Yeah. Well, our learning is that it's so important to have that first experience. Yeah. I mean, the selection of the core group is probably the most carefully thing work done. Once that group of 12 to 15 understand this process and kind of understand shared authority and empowerment and can actually lead in this kind of a process, those folks, then they would in turn recruit that first 35 to 70. Yeah.
This 11 or 12 that you trained from,
right,
the two that went to get it in the first place.
Right.
I see.
Yeah.
They would participate in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you would branch out to more communities.
Yeah. Then after that first year, that congregation, it's up to them to decide, you know, how they want to proceed from there. They can form a number of communities after that.
I see.
Yeah.
The minister gives the word, 45-minute sermon.
No. This, I don't know if there, rarely is there a sermon in the midst of this thing. The family groups most often are the planning group for that following week. And their most important thing is to prepare What are the questions that confront us in this particular text that involve this community, to lead the community into discovering what was going on there historically and what is God calling forth from us now. The pastor is involved initially very heavily in assisting them into working with that. So that, you know, pastors have to do their exegesis or preparing those texts a few weeks in advance to get those folks ready. But it's led by the community, and the pastor is a part of that. The only specific thing that the pastor does from the beginning is the Eucharist. Yeah. But the folks take that seriously. It's literally the work of the people. Yeah.
What is the role of the younger members now? Are they learners or are they participators in some way?
They're participants, yeah. What we found is that depends on the child, but by six, they can be pretty well participant to the whole thing. Toddlers may move around a little bit, but unless there's a number of toddlers, there's really no problem. Because it's amazing how many adopted grandparents emerge in a community where that toddler may start out with a parent, and during the confession time that toddler starts maybe moving around and hit three or four laps during the confession time. But participants, yeah, no question. It will also force the community to ask different questions of the text and make the whole thing much more experiential, which is a very important part. Yeah. But, I mean, for how many kids can they begin to get in touch with, how was it with you this week? At home? At school? They get into that pretty easily. And if they have a hard time verbalizing, sometimes they just have a piece of paper and just kind of draw out, you know, how was your week this week? And they tell them, you know, they talk about from their paper that they drew, how it was. You know? Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
First, so 6 to 9 months, that's just the beginning, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the first year process, yeah.
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 Okay, now you mentioned that in confession, absolution, and forgiveness, you break up into small groups.
Yeah.
Now each week, do you break up into the same small group?
Yeah, same group.
The same group.
Yeah, at least for the first 3 or 4 months, sometimes for the whole duration. Yeah, so it's the same group, yeah. That's an intergenerational group, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have kids to, but would, as I said before, they would not be from your same household.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah, so you wouldn't get the one household together.
Yeah.
You'd scatter them. Yeah.
But they wouldn't be, for at least several months, they would be all together in the same small group. In other words, you wouldn't 1 week be in one small group and the next
week you'd stay in the same family group for, yeah.
This wouldn't be on Sunday.
Some places it is, yes. Most of them meet during the week. But some meet Sunday evening. And some of this happens in some of our rural areas, especially where there's heavy dairy farming, for the folks to come in for that evening, Sunday evening is best time. You know, it's amazing. And also in some urban settings where there's a lot of folks traveling out and they want to be a part of it, Sunday evening is the time too. Yeah.
Of the importance of having the same people all the time within groups to be able to create a trust level.
Yeah.
So, something could happen.
Oh yeah. For instance, remember it's confession, absolution, forgiveness time and creed time. Twice. And so if this past week, here you would talk about how was it this past week, comes to creed time after that word, you're going to now, after some reflection, say, now, this is what I got to be about this week. And you're going to share it with those same people during creed time. And you may say, well, my issues at work this week. And state as specific as you can what it is that you're going to be about doing. Those folks will remember that, probably. You know, and it's happened sometimes that folks do some calling, how's it going? But the next week you get together and you say, well, how's it been? You know, folks know. It's a supportive thing, so that builds. If there's an issue that 1 week said, I was just too scared or freaked out to blah, 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 you know, well, how? You know, that may be the creed for the next 3 weeks. You know, but where do you get that support? And that's important part of the process.
Do you encourage members of each community to keep in touch with them all through the week? Mm-hmm.
We don't encourage that. I mean, the important thing is to call for some people there responsibility. There's a lot more happens, you know, than with just a lot of neat stories. In Lawrence, Kansas, a community was a kind of a university town. It was a college kid came to the, was a part of this congregation and came, was a part of the caring community. And some text triggered it, you know, that it was his grandpa or somebody that he hadn't ever really had a chance to talk to. So he asked the pastor, says, are there any elderly, you know, that he could go visit? And the pastor mentioned Ed to him, who was in a nursing home. And this kid, they'd only been in the community about 6 weeks, this kid went over to see Ed. And from that time on, Ed was a part of that community. Hauled him in his car in a wheelchair, brought him to that community. Yeah, and so, but nobody outside said to him, hey, why don't you? It comes out of, you know, that's what you gotta learn to trust. And not try to program it, but it, just let it happen.
Because of this, in their pilot congregations, did it show greater participation in church service, church worship, Sunday worship, is what I'm trying to say, or activity in the church?
Well, we monitored that fairly well. Our overwhelming learning was that people that were in this community were even more regular on Sunday morning.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Primarily because they saw things in that liturgy they'd never seen before. And they were all of a sudden had a sense of connecting with other people from a different place than they had before. It had its impact on the congregation too.
Do you know the people that tended to participate in the care community? Were they, you know how a church usually has a core group anyhow? Were they the ones that are doing everything anyhow, or did it go out in one?
Yeah. In our first year in the pilot, we just didn't say much about that. Just see what was going to happen. Couple things. One is that in one parish they just took on kind of an existing group. You know what I mean? They were really kind of frustrated because, in a sense, they were blocking each other because they assumed they already knew. So there was some resistance in that one. Another parish where the lay person that was trained and came from that parish was a social worker. And she recruited everybody in that congregation that needed help. You know what I mean? They were the kind of walking wounded. What we learned quickly is, again, the selection of that core group. That it be really representative of the congregation. And if you do that, then and you begin with that, and people begin to discover, like, you don't want all the leaders of the congregation. You may want somebody who's on the formal power structure in a congregation and some informal leaders, but you want the whole range, some single folks, some folks that are kind of on the fringe of the congregation, you know, so that people are discovering something. Yeah, so that's where that really needs to be addressed.
Eric?
Yeah, Marsh?
Does this have a tendency of being cliquish? I mean, not intentionally, but like I'm a member of a small group in our church in Chico, I think some people outside the group feel like we're really cliquish because we have a tendency of becoming, you're naturally much closer to the people you meet with every week or once a month, every other week, than you are with people you don't know.
How long have you been meeting?
About 4 years.
Okay. That's why it's 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. In one of our parishes, in a pilot, where again we didn't put the parameters on, there were two things that we had to discover about parameters. One was that the 11-week
preparation for the small group before they moved to the larger one. We discovered there were some of those folks that they thought this was such a neat experience of 12 to 15. They didn't want any kids around or anybody else. I mean, the small group thing was powerful for them. So we really had to hold their feet to the fire. Says, this is a preparation for the next step. Little did we know that we had to do the same thing there. I mean, you go 9 months, yeah. Because this one group says, well, this is too much fun. They went into their third year. Wouldn't break up. And they call me, so I met with them during their, I think after their, well, they just started their third year. And he said, things aren't going quite right. Because he says, we'd like to recruit some more people. And I mean, I said, no.
Well, the thing that we found was that it's really difficult to get other people in because because since you've been meeting so long, all of a sudden, other people just don't want to come in because they're afraid.
That's why we're talking 6 to 9 months. If you start early September and do your 11-week training and get your larger community at least begun around doing the Advent season, ideally. Through Pentecost, you know, or up to Pentecost. Then you break, and you recovenant new communities, you know. So, and primarily it is so that people constantly are enriched in their experience of the body of Christ by diversity. Yeah. Our goal is not to see how tight a community we can build. No. Our reason for coming together is that for the discipline of reflecting on our work, and the enrichment is to have that reflection be with different people. Yeah. So that hopefully this thing gets evaluated not by what happens inside of here, but what happens out there. Has it made a difference in you know, with yourself, in your household, out there, here and here? And I can tell you stories in each one of these arenas come out of it. That's what's different about it. And so many times you want to say, no, did everybody like each other and blah, 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 and, you know, or how long do you stay together? That's not the goal.
What is the process in getting a church involved in this program that you're talking about?
Basically, it's to have some few key people who are the folks who are going to say it's not happening here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to say to impact the decision making process of the congregation. I don't have the secret. I wish I did on how that happens. We're still trying to find out. When we first started in January 83, we sent out, you know, an announcement about a little bitty brochure, and our marketing advice said, you probably get 5-10% response in this thing. So we printed up for about 500, that is 10%. So we sent those out in January, February, March. By May, we had 1,200 requests. Just for information, see. So we miscalculated, and you know, that was the first one. And within a year, we had almost 2,000 requests. The next thing we discovered is it takes congregations 2 to 3 years, once they have the information, you know, to make the decision. Because it is a major shift, no question about it. And yet, it takes people who have a sense of committed to a relational kind of ministry and who aren't afraid to stretch themselves to learn some things. So it takes our I don't know what our market is. It's initially it's not going to be very great. But once there are some parishes in the area that are doing it, then it spins out because people can see, you know, what happens with some people. But it is a major shift.
Are you still doing like personalized training or the workshop?
We train, you know, regional places, and we train. Last training I did was Northfield, Minnesota. It has 7 congregations. Yeah.
I don't understand the word. What goes on in those 45 minutes, and who leads it early?
Okay. First of all, you would if you were part of the planning group, that'd be maybe 6 of you. You would take those texts for, you know, that week. Same text that you use on Sunday morning. And each of you would look those texts over and begin to ask those texts, you know, what was going on in those texts experientially. You know, what was happening in them. You know, when, for instance, the gospel for next Sunday, you'd have to start asking, what was Jesus driving at when he was pressing folks for the kind of discipleship that he was talking about? I mean, how would you picture that? So you get at the historical stuff. And what does it really get at for you? So 6 people are doing that. Okay? Yeah. And then you get together and you begin to plan out. In each one of those texts, you say, now, should we focus in on one? And you begin to talk about, now, how do you think that hits the people in this community? You know, how would that hit kids? How would that hit elderly people? And so what are the important questions we have to ask? Because other folks are going to read those same texts. And so you'd have somebody read, maybe all of them, but we're going to focus in on one. And began to ask questions and began to get people to talk about what is really going on there. And if you got something, you could if there was an exchange of some sort, you could dramatize it. You know, like the Good Samaritan story. You know, you could have people kind of walking along, you know, have everybody kind of mime what's it feel like to be wounded. And then picture, you know, these characters walking by. Yeah? Just get into that. Kids would love that. They don't like to just talk about it. But so you get into the historical thing, but you don't stop there. Then you go in and say, no, where is that happening now? Yeah. And so you really wrestle, work with, you know, try to get as many people picturing what that is. In other words, what is God cooking inside of us now? That's the point. So you work at the historical now, to where you begin to wrestle with, hey, there's something going on. And then you move to the creed time and say, no, okay, where is that going for you? Maybe different for you and you. But that's how the word is. But you don't necessarily say, this is what it is for everybody, and spend 45 minutes trying to convince them. you don't go that way. Yeah. You call, it's a way of trying to call people into it. Literally try to work hard at saying it's everyone's work.
But it does take planning on these
people. Oh, yes.
People who
yes.
Work and
you betcha.
Study and whatnot.
Yeah. That's another one of the discoveries. it's amazing. When I train people in those 5 days and these pastors and laypersons, they already start thinking about who they're going to get in this core group. And inevitably, 6 months later, I'll check out, see how's it going. And there'd be all kinds of surprises. It's the folks that they thought would be just dynamite. Would be just kind of flat. But so-and-so, well, we should invite them. You know. I mean, they will be the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's discovering. Once people have a sense of permission in an atmosphere where they can give themselves permission, you know, to really to move, that's what's been fun. Yeah.
Is it just the ALC doing this?
So far. I'm quite sure that next summer we'll have our first Roman Catholic parish.
Methodist, and probably UCC. Yeah. And an LCA, of course. But we haven't really been at a point where we can really go at a more aggressive marketing thing.
You've kind of talked around this. Diane and this gentleman kind of asked the same questions that I'm thinking of, but it seems to me like you're starting off with an elite group, even though you kind of said no, they pick a cost structure. But then when you came back and said cast one of those other labels you were thinking about who they were going to choose, have you been in it long enough to see how it works after you make these transitions? You know, you do your 6 to 9 months, and then certainly if it's a successful idea, you want to continue it, but you just don't want
to fizzle. Yeah. First of all, we haven't been in it long enough to really know. There's a couple of things. One, it's really how do you interpret something like this to a congregation is a real problem. For instance, is this worship? Would that be worship?
I didn't think so.
Yeah. But it's, if you try to describe it to somebody, it's different than what most people picture as worship. You know? I mean, this is literally the problem. Is it a learning thing? Well, it's not sitting in a classroom, but sure, people are learning. You know, and is it a Bible study? Yeah, it has some Bible study things to it. So that's the most difficult thing. And until people, it takes a parish 2-3 years to get a sense of enough folks to begin to not just have the experience themselves, but to begin to share it with the parish, so a parish can capture what some of these implications might be. It takes some time. The reason I would not say it's an elite group is it's a very demanding thing. You know, for instance, 2 hours a week for 6 to 9 months. And people have to really commit themselves to it. And so and people are invited to come and to be a part of that, but it is asking a lot. It's probably a pretty major way of trying to think of a new way of thinking about how congregations can function. But so it's a little frightening for some people.
How does this fit in with search?
That's what I was
going to ask. Yeah, it's I don't know how you would say fit in.
I mean, it'd be a continuation, different things. I suppose, after, you know, our congregation is searched, and I'm sure they'll continue until it's finished.
What our experience is that, in fact, I just talked to a pastor last week before I came, and he's very interested in getting the caring community because they've had search for like 2 years. He says, our people are getting some experience in sharing in small groups, mm-hmm. and they give some sense, but it's not really deep enough. And he's thinking seriously, people are there about getting into caring community.
Do you think they would disband their search studies then?
I don't know. We have several parishes that are doing both.
Parishes or
yeah.
Small?
Yeah, larger.
What about the rest of the congregation that is not in this, in this core group? There's maybe 35 to 70 people.
I think the interesting thing is that they get very curious.
It
just builds interest. Yeah. And so that the next year, the folks that are interested enough, when they offer it, not the first year, they want to know, what is this thing anyway? And not many people can tell them. And so as they get curious, then something else happens. Yeah.
Do you have any trouble getting that number of people at first? 35 to 70 seems like, especially in a smaller congregation, seems like it would be difficult to get that.
It depends on the parish. It really does. Yeah. There's some strange circumstances in a parish in Iowa.
was a rural parish, and there was some hurting going on there. And I mean, they had more sign up for the first time they could use. So, and there's some larger parishes where, you know, they I think they started with 36. So it's just hard to tell. And I think it's also for the leadership. We're just not used to doing this kind of relational ministry in the church. And even after the congregation had decided they want to do it and they send a couple of people for training, they're still, I can even tell during the training that this pastor and layperson are, you know, they're almost scared, you know, that will people accept them and all that kind of stuff, I mean, which just says to me how necessary it is.
Most of your work there in the Midwest, or
no? We have 8 parishes in South Pacific District. I think there's 3 in North Pacific, Port Angeles, and around in Seattle. There's several in the Midwest, several in Wisconsin. One down in, let's see, a couple in Ohio. There's one in Detroit, Inner City Parish in Detroit. It's a difficulty if you have, seven, six and younger, mm-hmm. Out of a group of maybe 40. That's a lot, you know. And some places they have to make some adjustments with that. But if you have a pretty well across the age spectrum. There's some powerful stories. I never forget, there was a young couple who had an 8-year-old girl who was in the community. I was there about February, I guess, and they had just been to their school, what do you call them, you know, where you go and find out how the kid is doing. Open house. Yeah. And because they were still kind of excited about this, they said the teacher had said, "No, what are you doing differently in your home? Because your little girl is obviously in the last month or so is much more poised. She'll get up and talk in class, and blah blah blah." And they couldn't figure out. The only thing that was different for them was the fact they were part of the caring community. Now that little 8-year-old was a part of that family group, and was listened to eyeball to eyeball by some adults week after week. Says, "How is it with you?" And she would say, "A few of those kind of stories make you a believer quick, because those folks couldn't believe it." Yeah. Now, is it an improvement of poise program? Hardly. But there's lots of stories like that.
That happens here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it
does. There's a lot of, well, not a lot, but the kids that are here, especially in the winter, are just on the same level as everybody else.
Yeah.
And the communication with them is just, I mean, you just talk to them like they're adults.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. Yeah.
But it is just amazing when you get into a parish situation. I mean, no question, the most difficult thing was to get those parishes to take kids seriously as people. Once they began to take kids seriously as people, then everybody became people. It wasn't just kids or just anybody else. It was very, very significant. The toughest part and also the greatest learning was around that question. Yeah.
It was like Benny talking about taking handicapped just as people.
And I was very happy to see that's, even though we haven't made a real push on it, that's been a natural progression as a part of this thing.
Really exciting program you got going there.
Yeah, and we're literally still scratching the surface, I think. We've learned an awful lot. I mean, I don't think the ALC has ever done anything that's been this carefully researched. I know that for a fact. Yeah. Because my partner, Rich Bentz, came on board about 78 after we had kind of made a commitment to get going. And we researched those 20 parishes and did a very in-depth thing with three of them, all the way from a battery of tests for all the people we trained, and pre and post tests of the people in the communities. So we had a pretty good book on what was going on.
Will this be carried on in the new church?
Yeah, I'm quite sure. In fact, we're working at putting a situation together so we can really work more ecumenically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For instance, I was in Brazil in March, and it's very possible that a Catholic Lutheran team come from Brazil for training next year, which would be very exciting. Yeah, because the base community folks down there, they're really intrigued by how we do liturgy, which is not quite the way they're doing it.
What's a Catholic Lutheran team?
I was in Brazil, and I spent the first 2 weeks with Catholics who work with the base communities. And they're very interested in what we're doing with the liturgy thing. And the Catholic bishop in São Paulo that I talked to is a very good friend of a Lutheran missionary, and also knows the Lutheran who teaches in the Lutheran seminary. And so we got talking, and they said, rather than have them come here for training separately, because they basically want to translate the same thing, why don't they come together? So that would blow me away. And there, yeah.
What's the cost for the training?
As of now, for a parish, it's $950. That's for the 5-day training and the materials, plus includes room and board for the 5-day training. You don't have to buy any other materials after that. You reproduce the stuff out of the training manual.
In Minneapolis,
did
they go?
No, we train in different parts of the country.
Oh.
I had a training. It's in Los Altos on the west coast. We did some training up in Issaquah, Washington, a couple years ago. But we're scheduled in Los Altos, California. This one out in North Dakota? Near Williston, North Dakota. Northfield, Minnesota. Down in Texas. One in Milwaukee. Where's the other one? Florida. And I'll be in back to Germany next June and Norway.
Many miles.
Yeah. Well, if your parish is interested in getting involved and getting that training information, just drop our office a line and ask for the Caring Community Packet. I'd be glad to get you on our mailing list. Talk to your pastors and your parish.
Who's your office?
American Lutheran Church, 422 South Fifth Street. Yeah. I have one of the information book, a couple of information booklets. If you're interested in seeing those, I'll somebody else ask about it. I'll leave them around so you can look at them. Yeah, it's a basic description of what we're doing. Thank you for coming out.
Thank you.